From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. G8 leaders met at Camp David over the weekend to take on the crisis in Greece and try to stave off meltdown in the Eurozone. It's not clear it can be done. The shockwaves from a Greek exit from the EU, if it comes to that, would travel everywhere, the U.S. very much included. And the pace of the crisis is quickening. This hour, On Point, crisis in the Eurozone and implications for the world. You can join the conversation. Do you see the connections between turmoil in Greece, in the EU, and your economic future? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear first today from the G8 meeting at Camp David over the weekend, where the Obama administration was pushing growth over austerity. Here was President Obama during closing remarks on Saturday at Camp David.
There's now an emerging consensus that more must be done to promote growth and job creation right now in the context of these fiscal and structural reforms. That consensus for progress was strengthened here at Camp David.
Consensus strengthened, but those words may conceal some as well. Here's France's new president, François Hollande, saying Greece should remain in the Eurozone. Bloomberg provided the interpretation here.
The message which I wanted to bring, which I will reaffirm on Tuesday with Angela Merkel, is the wish that Greece remains in the Eurozone and respects its engagements, but aided and supported by Europe to stimulate its growth.
Joining me now from Washington is Howard Schneider, financial reporter for The Washington Post. Howard, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome. Hello. How are you?
Good. What came out of Camp David?
Well, looking at the summit communique, what comes out of these summits? You know, they didn't come out with a checkbook and promise to put $50 billion into an infrastructure fund for Greece to begin spending tomorrow. But what you did have was a little bit of a significant shift in tone in terms of discussing things like increased public spending, targeted public spending on infrastructure projects, network projects, things like that, that could make some of these peripheral economies more productive. And secondly, this was a small change, but a significant one. They agreed to begin looking at deficits on a quote-unquote structural basis, which in economic terms is a little bit technical, but it means they'll have a little bit more wiggle room to run greater deficits in times of recession as they're in right now.
Was there any sign that the decider in this gang, Angela Merkel, is on board beyond the kind of rhetorical nod to more growth, that Germany would take material steps to change the track that last week, anyway, Greece seemed on kind of for the exits?
Well, material steps, she has done, I think she gets short-sold a little bit in this process because she has put an awful lot of German financial wealth and resources behind this project. She's demanded some things in return. The things she's demanded in return, you know, aren't working out as expected.
I.e., Greece is refusing politically.
Well, yeah. I mean, they expected the Greek economy to bounce back quicker, et cetera, et cetera. That's not happening. Instead, we've got a recession that's engulfing most of the Eurozone now. Anything material? Not again in terms of an explicit financial commitment, but the fact that she signed on to a document that talks about potentially running, greater deficits in the short term in order to get a better long-term outcome is significant.
Do you have any sense of the back chatter at this meeting at Camp David about how people are? There's a kind of game of chicken here at some level, right? Greece saying we'll go, and that's going to cost you. Europe saying don't go because it's going to cost you. Where do people think we're headed?
Well, this is a good question. There is always a lot of back chatter at these meetings, and always there's been a game of chicken going on in Europe now for 3 years. I think two things you have to remember. Greece's capacity to take a unilateral action of any sort at this point is fairly well constricted because they know that the day they say, we're not doing any of this, we're going back to the drachma, they are broke and in a deep, deep depression. And without a lot of sympathy from the outside, from the IMF or anybody else, to get help, so they can't do that. Some sort of compromise has got to be worked out here. There are thoughts about extending the loan terms yet again, lowering the interest rates yet again, of centralizing some money, a pool of money that could in fact be pumped into infrastructure projects, targeted ones, ones that would make sense for that economy that might help out and give everybody a sort of face-saving way out of this.
But meanwhile, you've got Greeks themselves sort of doing a run on banks, a run on the euro. Could it not happen willy-nilly that Greece would end up, you know, no more euros coming in, everybody, Greeks sending their own euros out, and suddenly it's just a fait accompli?
Well, this is a risk. One thing you have to remember, you know, it's kind of like when you talk about U.S. defense policy, you tend to forget the fact that there's a nuclear arsenal behind the whole thing. The Eurozone has its nuclear arsenal as well. That's the European Central Bank. They have shown a capacity to surprise, to do things you didn't expect in order to keep things together. And even though they have recently expressed some skepticism and, in fact, limited the loans they're making to Greek banks, if it looked like this thing was really going to unravel because of money flowing out of a particular country because of a run on deposits, they could, A, move in with more loans to the banks, or, B, very quickly help get together a deposit guarantee scheme that extended across the whole Eurozone, much like the FDIC insures banks throughout the U.S.
And finally, Howard, the stakes for President Obama and his reelection campaign as Europe drives right along the edge of this cliff.
Right. Pretty profound to the extent that, Greece, international exposure to Greece has become less and less over the last 2 years. That's, in a sense, they've been quarantined, right?
By banks, commercial banks.
People have sold the bonds. They have pulled the money out. A lot of the adjustment to their problem has taken place. I think the international exposure inside Greece right now is maybe less than $100 billion, at least among banks, mm-hmm. according to the sort of central data that's kept. But the risk is that, you know, if Greece leaves, if they decide this is what we got to do and Europe decides you got to do it, what about Portugal? What about Ireland? What about Spain? If you end up with the type of widespread contagion, the real credit freeze along the lines of what took place after Lehman Brothers, then you do see trade problems, financing problems, and other problems creeping into the U.S. So he does not want this happening.
Recession potential on the back of chaos if it comes to that in Europe. Howard Schneider with The Washington Post, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Here's just one voice out of Greece, one woman describing the panic Greeks are feeling about the chaos there these days.
Everyone's very worried. Don't you see what's going on with bank liquidity? I hear that people are taking their money out of banks. They're worried that we might go back to the drachma. They're putting their money into safety deposit boxes. It's crazy. It's as if there's a war coming.
It's as if there's a war coming. We have two of the most respected thinkers on Europe and the global economy with us today. With us from New York, Simon Johnson, former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund, professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. He's senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics and author of White House Burning, The Founding Fathers, Our National Debt and Why It Matters to You. Simon Johnson, welcome back to On Point.
Nice to be with you.
And with us also from New York, Martin Wolf, chief economics commentator for the Financial Times, author of Fixing Global Finance. Economist Ken Rogoff calls him the premier financial and economics writer in the world. Martin Wolf, thank you very much for being here today.
It's a pleasure.
Did the trajectory of Europe's future change over the weekend at Camp David, Martin?
Not as far as I can see, though we now have a summit in store, so, and yet another summit. Mm-hmm. So maybe it will turn out to mean more than was obvious at the on the event. I think the crucial question is whether they can find some way of reaching a deal with some sort of Greek government, not now in existence, which can paper over the cracks for a little while longer. Because I think what has emerged is that though there was a few siren voices, really the leaders of the major European states do not want to see a Greek exit. They recognize the chaos that could cause. At the same time, that of course gives considerable leverage to the Greeks, and that makes the reaching a bargain that is satisfactory more difficult. And of course, it doesn't resolve what I see as the longer run problem, that there are really almost no circumstances, in my view, in which Greece can actually recover if it remains in the euro on current terms. But I think they might now be moving towards a set of modifications of and adjustments in the program that they have, which might be ones that a new Greek government could conceivably live with for a while. But none of this solves the underlying problem of Greece, or indeed the underlying problem, as I see it, of a number of other member states.
We will go to the big underlying issues here. But Simon Johnson, last week, world markets were signaling very loudly that they feared this thing just coming unraveled, a Greek exit, orderly or disorderly. What are the odds of that at this point, Simon?
Well, I think the odds of Greece leaving the euro, leaving the European banking system, they might continue to use pieces of paper with the words euro on them, but leaving the euro system, I think that's 80 or 90% probability in the near term. It's not so much world markets, Tom, it's the Greek depositors who've lost confidence in the financial and fiscal and monetary arrangements in Greece, and I really doubt that the European-level politicians are going to step in enough. I think they're actually more focused on buffering other countries such as Portugal, Spain, Italy, and Ireland from the consequences of something fairly disorderly in Greece.
Are you saying 80 or 90% chance it'll be back to the drachma, out of the eurozone, out of the EU?
Well, there are various ways to handle it, Tom, and perhaps we can get into it. But, mm-hmm. I think most likely in the near term is the Greek banks are cut off from the credit they can receive from the European Central Bank. You can still use pieces of paper that you can use the euro piece of paper. You can put a stamp on them and call that a new Greek euro or a new drachma, whatever you want. But can you still get credit for the Greek economy, for the Greek banks from the European Central Bank? That, I think, is not going to be the case in 3 or 4 months.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Europe's big unsolved crisis, Greece, and way beyond, maybe reaching a breakpoint. Simon Johnson is with us, author of White House Burning and 13 Bankers from MIT's Sloan School of Management, today with us from New York. Martin Wolf is here, chief economics commentator for the Financial Times, author of Fixing Global Finance, and you can join us. Are you watching? Are we watching the European Union melt down here? And if Greece tumbles out, what happens with Spain, Italy? If the EU comes undone, how will it hit you? And will Europe get more tightly bound out of all this like the U.S.? Or will it, could it, fly apart here? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. A lot comes back to Germany. Chancellor Angela Merkel was at the G8 summit. She talked afterward of how the next steps to strengthen, about next steps to strengthen the eurozone. Interpretation here by Bloomberg.
We completely agree that we need both fiscal discipline, restructuring of our budgets, and at the same time, all efforts for growth. The two determine each other. That means it is important to work on both tracks. All participants made this clear here today, and I think that is significant progress.
Two tracks, but how much for each one and how close to something falling apart here? Martin Wolf, you've been writing lately about a doom loop that Greece may be caught in and others would be caught in, likely, you say, if Greece exits. What is that?
I think it follows from what Simon was just talking about. You have economies which have very substantial fiscal problems despite being quite deeply depressed. This is partly because they're externally uncompetitive. It's partly because of damage to their financial systems. Itself, partly because of the financial crisis and partly because of what is happening since then. This pushes up the interest rates that governments have to pay. In the case of three countries, they're really now, Greece is one of them, of course, Portugal mm-hmm. and Ireland being the others, they're entirely dependent on official finance. Spain and Italy are not, but they are really squeezed very badly by the markets. Interest rates on these government bonds go vastly above the prospective growth of the economy in nominal terms. I mean, the gap is enormous. So they're caught in a debt trap. It's obvious to anybody lending to them that debt is on an explosive path in these circumstances. That then means that the private sectors in these countries can't borrow either. They're all tainted by a general sort of national sense of weakness, of disease almost. So the banks are also very weak. depositors start thinking, well, we really must take our money out. The wholesale funding is largely gone anyway, because they're dependent on the European Central Bank. Mm-hmm. The economy gets weaker still. The recessions get worse. The fiscal deficits get worse. The debt problems get worse, and you're in a nightmare decline of income and a decline in solvency. That is what's happening to really important countries. Above all, I think Spain. Greece is an extreme version of this, with unemployment close to 25% of the labor force and youth unemployment of 50%. Spain's figures aren't much better. Oh. So this is a massive political, economic, and social crisis affecting these countries, and at the moment, no plausible exit for them.
Howard Schneider with the Washington Post was saying earlier, kind of, not to fear, there's the nuclear arsenal of the European Central Bank, suggesting they can step in and fix this. Do you see that path available, Martin?
There's a question of can and will. It is clear that if a central bank wishes to do so, it has extraordinary power to purchase assets. It can create inflation. There's no doubt that for countries and debtors who are deeply encumbered by debt, a lot of inflation will be a tremendous help. But even short of that, of course, they can ease conditions in the markets very dramatically if they are really determined to do so. But the ECB is a politically highly constrained institution, both by its mandate, which is very strict in terms of the overwhelming emphasis, the dominant emphasis given to price stability, and by its politics. In theory, the Germans can be outvoted, and because they're just one member, they don't have a special vote. But the reality everybody knows is that if they lose utterly the confidence of the German people, if the German people conclude that the policies being followed by the ECB are going to destroy monetary stability, their monetary stability, in Europe and in Germany, then it's going to be very, very difficult to sustain this project. So I think the limits on what the ECB can do, which has been demonstrated again and again, are very substantial. In fact, I would say the ECB has done more than I would have expected, but it's not going to be an unlimited operation sufficient to bail out all these countries. That's just not going to happen, I think.
Simon Johnson, is this an EU, was slow motion, now maybe rapid motion, loss of confidence in itself as an idea, as a collective that we're seeing here?
No, I don't think the European Union or the idea of unifying the markets and the economies is going to suffer irreparable damage from this. We're talking about a particular exchange rate arrangement, Tom, that turns out to be a bad one. It wasn't suitable to these economies. The Germans have become more competitive over time. The peripheral Europe economies have become less competitive. And they need to change that exchange rate system. Problem is, they've built up so much debt, public and private and the combination, that it's going to be quite difficult and in some cases highly traumatic to make that switch. But they will get through this. I think there will be a strong part of the European economy, and there will be a viable currency, actually a currency that competes with the U.S. dollar as a safe haven asset.
But I read you just a week ago, Simon, and maybe I understand, but I read you here encouraging Europe to prepare for an orderly dismantling of the euro.
Yes, well, the euro with its current membership will not stand. I think it is – I agree with Martin that the European Central Bank will throw more credit at this problem, and they can buffer things in the short term. They can slow things down to some degree. But none of that solves the underlying problems here. I think it is important, and this is a major problem European politicians have, to think through, for example, Greece exiting, and to manage that in an orderly, cordial manner. The worst thing would be for Greece to – and the Europeans to split on the most awful terms, then that the consequences for Greece would be much more damaging. The losses for Greeks and for its creditors would be much bigger. And then people say, okay, what if this happens to Portugal or Spain or even Italy? What will the damage be there? What will be the political and financial market consequences? People will see worse outcomes, and that will then tilt the market pricing and the bond yields of those governments and the banks in those countries in a bad direction. So that's you want to really keep people calm, make people understand that the Eurozone, with the help of the European Union, and some international backing can manage these difficult scenarios. But the Europeans don't want to go there. The politicians refuse to talk about anything outside of what is the consensus among themselves. And the problem is that consensus changes on a weekly basis.
Well, Simon, you're talking about strengths there, but if I'm reading you correctly, you're also talking about writing off a lot of people, Europeans. Well, let's just start there. You say your currency is a malady that condemns at least a generation of Greeks, Italians, Spaniards, Portuguese, and Irish to the economic infirmary. That's a lot of Europeans.
Well, look, to be clear, Tom, I'm not condemning anybody to anything. This is the Europeans who brought this on themselves. This is a failure of a scheme at the level of European politicians and the people particularly who run the big countries who've dominated this agenda over the past 20 years. It was a bad scheme, and they should change the exchange rate scheme. When the U.S. went off gold in the 1930s, FDR's budget director remarked, "This is the end of civilization." And, of course, it wasn't. It was just a change in the exchange rate. These things can be managed in a sensible way. The problem is they have inherited a lot of debt, and that debt, much of it, needs to be restructured. There are orderly ways to restructure debt and to keep confidence relatively stable in that context, or you can do it in a disorderly way and lose control of events and be kicked around by the financial markets, and that is, I'm afraid, where the Europeans are going.
So, Martin Wolf, give us the dynamics of Europe's consideration of what to do here. This has been described as a fiscal crisis, but also a kind of moral standoff where Germans, just for one at least, don't want to step in and bail out what they see as having been years of bad behavior.
Well, I should start by saying that actually, and perhaps this is very good for your program, I rather disagree with Simon on some important points.
Oh, please.
I think that dismantling what he calls an exchange rate arrangement, and this really isn't just an exchange rate arrangement, it has much more profound economic and political implications than he suggests.
Are we just talking about the euro here, or what is it? What do you mean?
We're talking about the euro. Mm-hmm. The euro is not just an exchange rate arrangement. Mm-hmm. Technically, of course, it's a single currency.
Right.
There are no exchange rates to have rates, no currencies mm-hmm. to have rates. And the single currency implies, at least in theory, that all assets and liabilities denominated in this currency are, at least from the currency point of view, equivalents. And that was a sovereign, profound commitment of these states. Unraveling that from an economic point of view is actually very, very difficult. I think it's, I personally believe, we could perhaps discuss this, much more difficult than Simon suggests. Gold was external to the US in the 30s. Mm-hmm. The dollar area, the dollar currency union, as it were, the United States itself was not affected. Here, of course, the euro is not external. It is the currency of all mm-hmm. these countries. So the technical dissolution process, even if it's partial dissolution, will create huge problems, and in my view, would involve at least temporarily the cessation of normal banking and normal finance in Europe, and that would cause a depression. But that's quite apart from the political side. I have always been opposed to this project from the very beginning.
The EU,
for the reasons
the
that,
Euro,
so,
the
Euro project, mm-hmm. the Eurozone project. The Euro project is now roughly 25 years old. Mm-hmm. We can discuss exactly when it started. But it was seen by all those who created it as the capstone of the great European project, both economically and politically. Mm-hmm. Unraveling it is a profound statement that the European Union is not a one-way process. It's not an endless movement towards ever closer union, quote unquote. I think that has very profound political implications. Furthermore, there's no doubt that, and you brought this up in your question, that the countries would end up blaming one another very, very harshly for the failure, as it would be seen, of this incredibly important project. And particularly, Germany would blame everybody else for being sloppy and irresponsible and undisciplined. Not quite everybody, but almost everybody else, including France, by the way. And the other countries who would be ejected in one way or the other, leave, would blame Germany for not having supported the system when it was under stress, while Germany, in their view, has been the biggest beneficiary of the project. So, and I'm not going to go in right now into who's right or wrong, but I think the political consequences of its dismantling, particularly given the economic difficulties of doing it, will be very, very severe for Europe.
I'm just trying to understand how you see the likelihood of that then. Is this a hypothetical dismantling, or do you see it somehow baked in the cake already here?
Well, I was just responding to Simon's view that it was baked in the cake, and then I was trying to explore from my point of view of how seriously you should take this. Now, this is my view of the likelihoods. I regard what Simon thinks of as the outcome, namely a substantial diminution of the Eurozone with the loss of quite a large number of members, as now something in the neighborhood of 50-50. This is just it cannot be more than a guess. If it were a normal currency arrangement, I think the chances would be close to 100%. But it is not a normal currency arrangement. The costs of dismantling it are high, both economically and politically. And that means they could make a really big effort to make it work. And here is a point where I think I do disagree. I think it'll never be perfect or even close to it, but I do think it will be possible to make it work if they were to resolve on the necessary steps to do so. And we could discuss what would it be needed to make it work. Greek departure is still very likely, but I think they could make the rest of it work if they dealt with the consequences of Greek exit well, and if they took further steps, and we could discuss those, to make the rest of it work rather better in the future.
We'll look at that. Let me bring up my listeners in, if I may. Peter in Montreal. Peter, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Just quickly, I'm a very religious reader of the Financial Times. You mentioned the bad behavior of Greece, and I think one of the problems that the Greeks face is the endemic corruption and tax evasion and mismanagement that exists in the country. There's also misappropriation of EU structural funds and so forth. And although I hear a lot of elegant explanations about what corrective measures Greece has to take or Italy to get its house in order, I don't hear much about the issue of corruption and mismanagement. And I don't think that any amount of money, whatever amounts of billions are pumped into Greece or Italy or other so-called pigs, will actually solve the situation until the issue of mismanagement and corruption is
just addressed. Just a blunt critique there, and we'll pick that up. Peter, let me get one more, if I may, first from Lebanon, Tennessee. Bill, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a semi-retired guy that consults 100 days a year. Been going to Greece for the last 10 years, a couple times a year. I'm leaving Friday to Greece.
Good luck.
Well, the good news is 15% of what I do is pro bono, and they may move into the pro bono column.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I'm amazed at all of the Greeks I've learned to know, some of which are close friends, well-educated, very intelligent, do not feel any responsibility for this. They don't feel that the problem they're in is because of not payment of taxes, is because of too many government subsidies. They think, to a man and to a woman, it's a conspiracy by the powers outside of Greece that have got them in this trouble, and they're very resentful about it.
A conspiracy of commercial bankers to bleed them, or what?
Germans, rich people, Americans, the American military, the American wealth establishment, the fat cats, them, those. You know, they usually when you feel guilty, it's kind of a haze of who it is. It's them. It's those. You know who they are. But they don't feel like it's their problem. They don't feel like they were the cause of electing bad people, of sucking up too many subsidies. Subsidies for everyone, cab drivers, hair beauticians, musicians, everyone.
Bill, let us hit that before the break, if I may. Martin Wolf, what about the Greeks who say we've been put upon, set upon here, not our fault?
These are both basically the sort of the same question. None of this is very surprising. For very deep reasons to do with its history, Greece is a relatively dysfunctional state. I sometimes refer to it as a country with a suppressed civil war. We suppressed it, Britain and then the US suppressed it. The issue, underlying issues were never resolved. It's never been a stable democratic system. That's the reality. And it's not going to change in 1 or 2 years. That's also the reality. And you just have to accept that as a constraint in dealing with it.
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Europe's unsolved crisis, Greece, and way beyond, maybe reaching a breakpoint, and maybe soon. Martin Wolf is with us, chief economics commentator for the Financial Times, author of Fixing Global Finance. Simon Johnson is here, former chief economist at the IMF, author of White House Burning and 13 Bankers, co-author there. Here's President Obama at the G8 Summit, Camp David, Maryland, on Saturday.
All of us are absolutely committed to making sure that both growth and stability and fiscal consolidation are part of a overall package that all of us have to pursue.
Overall package, but temperatures are rising. 20,000 people marched Saturday in Frankfurt to protest Europe's handling of the euro crisis. Here's one protester talking about why he took to the streets. Reuters gave us the interpretation.
I'm demonstrating against European governments' euro debt policies because they threaten the economy of Europe. They threaten social solidarity. They threaten democracy. This is one thing we are demonstrating against.
Let's go right to caller Lawrence from Heartland, Vermont. Lawrence, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, Lawrence. You're on the air, my friend.
Yes. Hi. Lawrence from Heartland once again. I just wanted to... Hello?
Hello. You're on the air, Lawrence.
Sorry. Yes, okay. I just wanted to comment on Simon Johnson's approach here. It seems he didn't really pick up what he wrote in his own book a little bit about the development of a strong central bank that is capable of functioning as such, which Europe doesn't have yet. What we have in Europe essentially is a series of states all with mandated balanced budget amendments,
mm-hmm.
and there's no central bank that can actually act as a cushion. There's nothing like a euro bond. There's nothing like a central function to send out a national stimulus rather than just one from Germany to Greece, for instance.
Right, right.
And this is a fundamental principle that the Europeans have been talking about for a long time. It goes back at least 15 years. And this may be the result of the crisis that I see coming out of this. The Europeans aren't going to give up on the euro so quickly.
So maybe they get to something like a Fed and maybe the euro bonds. Simon Johnson, how about it?
Well, to be clear, the Europeans do have a powerful central bank. What they don't have is fiscal unification. And what I think Lawrence is referring to in terms of my book is the argument in White House Burning, which is if you go back to the 1780s and look at the origins of the Constitution, the initial arguments about what should be done, and then how Alexander Hamilton interpreted that agreement and became very controversial as a result. It's very much about saying there should be a central government with its own source of revenue, the ability to issue and manage debt. And in that context, in a modern economy, we would say that there should be a central bank working with the government, but separate from the government and also focused on making sure inflation does not get out of control. Look, I agree that the Europeans, if they could move towards fiscal unification, that would be a big deal. It's probably, I might call that necessary but not sufficient for dealing with their underlying problems because they're not just fiscal. And I do believe at the end of the day, a subset, part of some of the countries currently in the Eurozone will form such a fiscal union. They will be robust, they will be strong, and they will issue a currency that will compete against the dollar as a reserve currency and as a safe haven.
Who would be in that rump union?
Well, I think it'll be more Germanic than the Eurozone at the moment.
Okay, German plus
so
what?
Germany, Finland, Austria, the Dutch potentially could get in. The big question is France. Will France be in? And to Martin's very good earlier points about the sort of potential existential crisis here, a lot is going to be about whether the Germans are seen by their neighbors to behave in a reasonable way or an unfair way. And a lot of that is, can they bring the French with them wherever they decide to go? I think the French will end up in that more Germanic currency union.
Martin?
And fiscal union.
Can you picture that coming here, kind of rump EU, a Germano-EU?
The interesting thing is that for those of us who follow this closely mm-hmm. in the 90s, Simon was probably one. That was exactly what the Germans hoped and expected, or at least German financial people hoped and expected what they called a Klein Euro, a little euro.
Mm-hmm.
Little euro. So that would be basically the countries Simon has listed. Now, this didn't happen for two reasons. First, the Germans found it really hard to say no to all the others when they did sort of meet the criteria. And that gets to the really tough problem for the Germans getting out of this, which is, given the history, saying no to people who are desperate to be part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have to be a lot of no's if what Simon talks about is going to happen. And the second problem they have is what to do about France. The French are very keen not to be and have always been very keen not to be in a binding embrace with Germany that doesn't include other significant countries as counterweights to Germany. Their fear is that if precisely in the sort of union that Simon describes, they will be the permanently weaker partner, subject, of course, to constant erosion of their competitiveness by collapses in exchange rates of the countries outside, like Italy or like Spain, which are much more competitors of France than Germany. And it's something that really frightens the French elite a great deal. They like the big Europe. So getting from here to there, and we got here not by accident, will, I think, be an enormously painful political and economic prospect and project. It could take years, decades. It would involve dismantling what has been created.
Wow.
And I'm afraid I'm very, very concerned that the actual dynamic, when that starts, could start dismantling a lot more than just the euro. Well, maybe I'm much too gloomy, but it's what I'm worried about.
Talk to us about that, about the consequences of the Greek problem then running right on through Portugal, Ireland, Spain, Italy, those ending up on the outside of the EU. In the process of that happening, and if, you know, when the dust settles and that's done, what are the consequences in Europe and beyond, Martin, if that's where we go?
Well, let's just think, first of all, of the short-run dynamics, which in a way is what President Obama, I presume, is concerned about. If you have a, and this is the extreme case, you have a, and you are having now, a huge run on Greek liabilities, including bank liabilities. The banking system of Greece implodes. The country gets into an absolutely terrible crisis, and the government basically says, we've got no serious alternative. We've got to go out. The ECB, as Simon has already suggested, the European Central Bank, says we can't fund Greek banks because they don't have any decent collateral. We can't take Greek government bonds because we have no idea what they're worth, if anything. Mm-hmm. So Greece goes. Now, I'm just putting it very briefly, Italians, Spaniards, and so forth, they really aren't stupid. They can see what's happening, and they will realize, indeed they already have realized, that the euros they hold in their bank accounts are not the same as the euros that Germans hold in German bank accounts. And they will want to get their money out, and you will get not only the withdrawal of wholesale funds already happened, but you will get a withdrawal of deposits, a genuine bank runs across
Europe. So get it out and ship it north. So
ship
it's just in a
wherever
Swiss
they
bank,
can, outside the European areas, outside the Eurozone, into safer banks, into German banks, possibly Dutch banks, French banks, if they can't do any better, but out. The ECB will then have to recycle this as lender of last resort, taking out
pump money back into Italy,
a huge net exposed position. So their net assets of the Bundesbank in the system, which are now about 700 billion euros, could very easily, in a short while, be 2 or 3 trillion euros, which will really terrify the wits out of the German government because they can see the losses. I'm just talking about the dynamics.
Yes.
To stop this process, I think it's very likely, particularly if the ECB indicates lack of comfort with taking this enormously exposed position, that the governments of Italy, which could also, and Spain, which couldn't sell their debt in this situation either because they're selling a lot to their banks and they don't have any money anymore, that would have to consider a bank closure, a closure of banks, which is, of course, indeed what Roosevelt did famously in the 30s. Mm-hmm. That would make the panic much worse and the economies would cease to function in large measure. Normal trade credit would cease. Nobody's going to be lending to Italian or Spanish borrowers in these situations. You've got a major cross-border panic situation, which would make the Lehman post-crisis look trivial. I should remind you that all major American banks, the really big American banks, are all deeply involved in Europe. They have European operations, and they will cushion themselves as best they can, but it's difficult to do so altogether. In this situation, we would have both a political and economic crisis. Now, I'm not predicting that all this will happen, but that would be the short-term meltdown scenario. If a Greek exit were mishandled and the relevant firewalls were not put in place, and at the moment the firewalls are not strong enough to deal with a comprehensive panic across all the countries that Simon thinks ought to be out of the euro, you are basically dismantling a currency arrangement, and in my view that requires a period of essentially bank or actual exchange controls, and the euro as a currency ceases to exist as a genuine currency across the whole zone.
I've read over the weekend.
That's a scenario.
It's pretty terrifying. I've read over the weekend, though, with all that. I mean, people talking about Greece falls out of the euro and the United States has a mild recession. A mild recession seems mild in the face of the sort of hell on earth you're describing there.
Well, I'm assuming in this situation that the United States, which fortunately does have a functioning central bank, by the way, the ECB is not a bad central bank, I would agree completely with Simon, and a government that, despite all the problems, has the freedom to act, it can borrow very easily, would act to provide liquidity to U.S. markets and to U.S. banks on an absolutely unlimited scale. And the probability is, and I can say only probability, that the loss of the capital base of U.S. banks would not be sufficient, given that they have clearly improved a great deal, to undermine the solvency of the really big American banks. That though there will be therefore be a big shock, it will be very unpleasant, and it could certainly, I think, lead to a recession in the U.S., provided the necessary scale of action were taken in the U.S., I think it's probable that it can cushion itself reasonably well. But I mean, we're talking here about scenarios where we really wouldn't know precisely how it would work out.
Breathtaking. Ken in Norfolk, Massachusetts. Ken, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Great program as usual. Over the weekend, Italian Prime Minister Monti was asked what his feelings were about the future of democracy in Europe, and of course he's a technocrat, and he said that he felt that, you know, democracy was the only way to go for Western countries, but it might have to be rethought in terms of being more long term than being with the short term focus that it has now. And I'm just wondering what your guests feel about that,
Simon Johnson. I don't know. Political upheaval on that scale, rethinking democracy? I mean, people are talking here about the 1930s, saying not as bad as the 1930s, but once you even start bringing up those comparisons, in Europe's case, it's like everything's on the table.
Well, everything is on the table. You're going to have democracy. These countries are very deeply democratic at this point, but it's very hard in a democracy to run economic policies that involve unemployment going to 20 or 25%. This is not the 19th century. This is not the era of the gold standard, when you could have these big swings in employment levels. Very high unemployment levels will give you a political backlash. The problem, if we can get through the next few months, if we can buffer, if they do provide the firewalls, as Martin has identified, there is still this deeper issue of the adjustment programs that they're trying to run. I don't think that Portugal, Spain, Italy can withstand the kind of unemployment levels they would get from the current trajectory of policies. And if that's the case,
austerity,
then the backlash Yes, exactly. The backlash keeps coming at you. This will be an on-again, off-again crisis. The European Central Bank will throw a lot of credit at it. The Germans will become increasingly upset, as Martin said. The euro itself will be called into question, and people will be in the streets saying, we don't want austerity, and we don't want this path of adjustment. So it's a very tough situation.
Martin, can you paint for us what this animal that was described at Camp David over the weekend, growth plus fiscal adjustment, austerity, I guess, both at the same time. Is that possible? Is that on the rails? Is that coming? Have people visualized it, planned it?
I think what's come out there is just nonsense. It's obvious that they all mean something different by the sorts of policies that would actually have to be pursued to generate growth. Germany thinks that by growth-oriented policies, it means structural reforms and policies that improve competitiveness, the policies that they think, and partly rightly, they followed in the first 8 or 9 years of this millennium.
Yep.
And they want everybody else to pursue this, and everything will be fine as long as you're prepared to go through the next 5, 6, 7 years of pain. And the others think, quietly, obviously not saying this is completely crazy for the reasons Simon has just said, we are not going to be able to live with 5 or 6 years of unemployment of 15-25% and upwards, that's going to blow us apart. We need demand now. Now, it's pretty clear that the US is actually on the latter side, but you can't have demand now in Europe without the central bank being prepared to create it. I think it could, so I'm less pessimistic in the sense about the possibility, but the central bank has to act, and of course, without greater fiscal solidarity. You can't have fiscal expansion in countries whose real interest rates are going to be 5 or 6% on their government borrowing. It's impossible. So the whatever they want, the Germans hold the key and the Germans have locked the box. And as long as that remains the case, I think they are, and here I agree with Simon, on this doom loop situation. It could be solved, but I don't think it will be, and nothing that happened on this weekend has changed my judgment.
When will we know? Because things are moving quickly here. Whether the Germans are saying, no, we're not going to do it, we'll sort of go for the kleiner euro, the smaller euro, you know, EU, and off we go. Is there one decision? Is there a moment at which that will be crystal clear, Martin?
It's conceivable, though I'm absolutely certain the Germans have made no such decision. They think that they can have what they have now on their terms.
Okay.
The real problem arises, and it may be very soon, when the Germans come to the conclusion, we can't have what we have now on our terms. So do we have it on their terms, i.e. an inflationary union, more inflation than we like, with fiscal transfers forever, as it were, or do we get out? They haven't got there yet. If there were a Greek exit, which were very messy, it created the contagion we've discussed. They couldn't deal with it, or they couldn't find a way of dealing with it. So it blew up really badly in peripheral Europe. And that is certainly a possible outcome in the next few months. Then the Germans might be faced with this choice very, very soon. It might all be over, as it were, by Christmas. I'm not predicting that. But we are in very, very extraordinary times.
Simon, we've just got 20 seconds. Can the global economy, you know, China, India, maybe the U.S., roll on without Europe?
Europe is a quarter, more than a quarter of the world's economy, Tom. If they blow themselves up in spectacular fashion, no one will be exempt from the damage.
Simon Johnson, author of White House Burning, 13 Bankers, professor at MIT Sloan School of Management. Thank you very much for being with us today, Simon.
Thank you.
And Martin Wolf, chief economics commentator for the Financial Times, author of Fixing Global Finance, joining us today from New York. Martin Wolf, thank you very much for your insights.
It's a pleasure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.